Pickaxe.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hills, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Extended rest for the month of January is brought to you by you lovely folks at patreon.com/dandr. We've told you about it many times before, but that is where you can get tons of bonus content for just a few shekels tossed our way to keep the lights on each and every month. We truly appreciate you guys taking the time to check our stuff out and support us and help us do what we do. Without further ado, let's get on with the show. Let me rewind. Welcome to Extended Rest for the month of January. Let's do that thing where we go around the table. I'm Jason. I'm normally the Dungeon Master. Tonight with us is one Rob Wiesehan.
Hey, I'm Rob. I play Ubo in Group A right now, formerly Malchus Grimnus in Arc 1.
And Ryan?
Hey, I'm Ryan. I play Varys on Group C.
And Zach.
What's up? My name is Zach, and I play Avalan Bates on Group C, formerly Avalan on Group 4.
Jamie will be joining us in just a little while. Quick note, if you guys use our website, I spent the better part of 7 hours yesterday trying to spruce it up and make it a little more user-friendly. If you guys got suggestions for us, swing on by our email or Discord or whatever and send them our way. I updated the cast page a bit. Some of the bios need updating because some of them literally have not been updated in 5 years.
Am I on the webpage now?
Yes, you are.
Yes.
You're a cast member. So is Mandy. Rob's bio still references his YouTube channel.
Yeah. But man, I gotta get something to you. I gotta get something fresh to you.
You're cool. Like it's mostly just I wanted it to look a little better because everything was starting to get a little cobwebby. It's starting to look a little crappy. Ugh, guys. As I said in the pre-show, all hell kind of broke loose. We haven't done one of these since October. I don't know about you, Rob. I've been getting messages about things, and there have been a lot of posts on our group page on Facebook and all kinds of stuff. Lots of thoughts and feelings about the last several episodes. We're mostly going to be talking about episodes 56, 57, and 58 of ARC 2. But if you guys in the chat want us to talk about something or want to shout something at us, just shout something at us.
Yeah. Speaking of interactions, we both had that tweet of that one listener who said, like, she had this terrible day at work and then got home and listened to, like, the tail end of episode 57 and burst into tears in her car in her driveway. And I was
no.
Yike.
Okay. I'm always there for, like, a shoulder to cry on or, like, hey, it's okay, everything's fine. But there's a part of me that's thinking, good. I'm glad you felt something. Like, it's just, even if it's a bad day or something, it's like, yeah, that'll pass. It's going to be great. There's ups and downs, but it's like, man, I'm glad you felt something and it hit you that hard. Like, yeah.
I get that.
Yeah. Sorry, I spoke over somebody. Sorry.
You're fine. How's about we jump right into ARC 2, episode 56, which was taking stock. Jamie's not here, and it's a Group B episode. Well, we'll just speak for Jamie. Whoever thinks they know what Jamie was gonna say or do, just jump on it.
That's a dangerous thing, Jason.
Are we locked? Can we pop ahead and just, like, double back for her?
I mean, we have a format, but who gives a shit? I guess we could do whatever we want, right?
Well, I mean, you're still having her on the show, right? You haven't told her, like, hey, take your time.
See, yeah.
You've been voted off the island or
no.
Whatever. No! Terrible pop culture reference I just made.
I to say that's very timely.
Man.
Here.
How about that Survivor, huh? Reality TV on the cutting edge.
Oh, man. I just started watching this little show. It's called American Idol. I think it's going to take off.
You don't say.
Oh, it's Bards, right? Bards.
Okay. You know what? Fuck it. Let's jump ahead.
I love you, Bree.
Let's jump ahead to...
Are any of you familiar with The Real World? It's on music television.
Jamie, stop stressing. Why did she tune into this? And then, like, that's the worst for her. Let's jump. You know what?
She needs some entertainment.
Yeah, we're going to jump ahead to Arc 2, Episode 57, which is Make It Right, which is a Group A episode. And we got a Rob, so we could talk about Group A stuff.
Unleash your judgment, chat. Tell me how you really feel.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
I was really happy with this because it's like, okay, yeah, the second episode, once we get rolling and get loose, that's when we'll talk about all the death and destruction. And no, we're jumping right in. So, previously on Group A, let's talk about everything that's happened since October, because about, 9 episodes have come out since then. So, we had a feedback episode in November, I believe it was, or December, something like that. But basically, there were two camps. Three, technically. There was one camp that said, yeah, stay the course, everything's great. Then there was one camp that said, boy, nothing really happens. I just don't feel like there's enough consequences. I don't feel like there's that threat of death. I don't feel like there's that blood in the water. Then there's a group of people who were like, it's too grim. It's too, like, and this is before. Mm-hmm. So within the span of 2 months, there were 4 deaths, not counting Patreon. And there were a lot of deaths on Patreon.
Speaking of two camps, by the way, I see two camps in the chat. One is, I love how you played your character, and the other is, I literally would have executed Ubo.
Holy shit! Okay. This is why we're here.
Get into that.
Yeah.
I like that passion.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Let's talk about exactly what happened, and then we'll talk about, you know, where people kind of fall on either side of that. So, essentially, the group hit the road, right? They're leaving Aubrey. They're striking out to the east. They're trying to get to Donhurst. They got to get to the Divide. They got a long journey ahead of them. So they hit the road. They encounter a cart, kind of a suspicious-looking cart. It looks like it belongs to this vampire countess in Donhurst. And the group is kind of debating on what to do with it. And in the midst of that, Ubo just says, ah, screw it. And kind of erupts earth underneath this cart.
And I'd been, previous to this, I'd been showing remarkable restraint.
You absolutely had.
Confronting very well socialized, integrated vampires, even though they're an abomination to all I hold dear. Like Yeah, I had held off on that. So I was pent up a little bit.
Yeah. And, okay. two people die in this blast, Masoka and Amvin. So the group rushes back to Aubrey, and they go through a bunch of stuff, and essentially Kirkland, the soul sitting within Donovan's armor, chimes up and says, I think I can help with this, but... you know, it could kill you, that type of thing. So Donovan literally risks himself to bring back Masoka, and it goes off without a hitch. Kirkland hasn't spoken since then, but we'll see what comes of that. Now, that's basically, that brings us up to episode 57. I want to say this, because I feel that in the past, I feel like Malchus was much more a center point for controversy like this. I don't think Ubo should really be to blame here. Not for the cart part of it.
Not like, for the cart part of it. No, that, I mean, who would have thought someone would assemble a cart with such contents? That's what an outlandish thing to put in the woods, huh, Jason?
Yeah, man. Yeah. The Wizards of the Coast, man. What are you going to do?
Sound of teeth grinding.
Yeah, I don't, I really don't think it could have been anybody doing that kind of thing. Jesus, just a few episodes before that, Maddie was the first to fire off on some slavers, and, Masoka had done some stuff in town and steal. Any one of those events could have led to something horrendous. So I really don't think Ubo, like, it's just a thing. Now, everything after that, you can make your case for, and I definitely want to read stuff off in the chat. You guys talk about that while I add Jamie to this call.
Well, as long as you've got a little pause here, you were saying you were getting messages about, like, half the people saying it wasn't lethal enough.
Yes.
And saying it needed to be more brutal, and half the people saying it was too dark. On the subject of, like, not lethal enough slash things of consequence aren't happening, I feel like that's not as much the case. Like, not all things of consequence are violent and, like, character death threatening. Like, mm-hmm. when I read, I read, like, interactive fiction, like, the really, there's a really good brand making stuff on Android and iTunes Store called Choice of Games. And Choice of Games makes amazing interactive fiction that plays out, like, extended text form Mass Effect almost. Right. So you're making, even in, like, non-action chapters or whatever of these stories, you're making these consequential decisions that let you decide, you know, let you show the world who you are, and the world then acts back to you and things like that. And that's all stuff of consequence, even though I can understand that it becomes, like, kind of long form chatty at times. But I think there's definitely still stuff of really significant consequence that happens even when we spend entire sessions role playing.
Yes, I think, okay, even after the cart thing, and there was a bunch of stuff that happened on Group B, there were a couple of people that were upset that characters didn't stay dead. And I feel like resurrection's tough enough in our world. If people, let's say, if you want to put it that way, if people get away with it, then awesome for them, man, because they might not be so lucky next time.
Well, you put stakes on it, right? Like, yeah. you assigned dice rolls to it, and you said, hey, I won't necessarily tell you what's on all these tables, but things could go horribly wrong.
Yep.
And one person got away with it pretty clean.
Yep.
And one person got away significantly less clean. So, like, like, it's okay if the characters come back as long as there a price was paid, or a price was risked, at least.
Right.
So, yeah, I think, you know, we've talked about how you took a hatchet to the spell list for Theria's version of D&D 5e, mm-hmm. and removed, like, no drama resurrection. And the alternative has been really good for storytelling.
Yeah. Hi, Jamie.
Hi.
Hello.
Can you guys hear me okay?
Absolutely can. You're
yes.
Doing, yeah. Sounding great.
I am so sorry.
You're fine.
No, I'm the worst person imaginable.
I think you're, like, third worst. Like, there's a couple ahead of you. You're fine.
Oh, I can, like, catch my breath. I didn't hear the question, but the answer sounded really educational. So what was it? I want to know what the question was that I missed, because, like, I don't have any context for what Rob was saying.
You're jumping right in. You were just like, yes, I am part of this chat.
I was following along on my phone for a while, and then when you added me to the call, I had my phone going, my computer going, Skype going, and I was like, oh my gosh, there's too many things. So I, like, shut everything down before I jumped in the call. So I, like, totally missed
the
inner space.
Yeah, yeah. I was countering that people were saying, like, well, it was, you know, just recently for Group A, it was too easy for people to come back to life. And I said, well, D&D as written has resurrection spells that have virtually no significant cost in bringing people back. Like,
yeah.
For one of our characters, a price was risked and dodged. For another one of our characters, a price was risked and paid. It's been significantly better for storytelling than the way the D&D spells are written in canon.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And I feel like in the case of Donovan's resurrections, that was so circumstantial. There's no way to know if he can do that again, because the episode ended with Kirkland being gone from the armor, if I remember correctly. So,
or at that least was not just, talking.
Exactly. Yeah. So he could be gone for years, thousands of years, hundreds of years. You never know now.
I think the one person I responded to an email that it was kind of like, yeah, if you're still taking feedback, it's way too easy for people to come back. Or at least it seemed that way, because we had group deaths on group A and B back to back, and then a bunch of people came back. And I think two things. One, they're pretty much assuming that Donovan could just do that at will, which he can't. And two, I don't think they were counting NPC deaths. I think that person only counted party deaths as relevant. And if someone dies bringing someone else back, and in the case of Group B, that's what happened. Someone lost someone very dear to them, their mentor, almost like a mother figure, gone, to bring them back. I look at that as very interesting from a character perspective. We're going to see, death is death, right? A character dies, that's very sad, and that can affect the rest of the party. But for them to touch on death or come back from that and kind of bring this weight with them, I think that's better for roleplay. I think you get more mileage out of that.
Mm-hmm. Right. And group-wise, you can't say it's easy to resurrect all across the board, because think about if, Merrick just died out of nowhere. Like, say if he died and Ethne couldn't keep healing him, he just died right there. We're shadow luck. We don't have any way to bring him back.
Yeah. That's fair.
It's very situational. And, I mean, every group had a major sacrifice in order to do that. I mean, just looking at pretty much what they traded for their lives.
Yeah.
And we haven't seen any repercussions yet either, is I think a big thing too. Like, at least for Group B, we've seen little bits and pieces of after Larg back, but we haven't seen anything for you guys at all. You know?
Well, okay. Nothing's aired yet. We sure as hell recorded
something. That's true. Nothing's aired yet. That's true.
there's a rough episode.
I got to remember, there's a whole aftermath that none of the people in the chat have heard yet.
Boy. So I don't get any special treatment just because I have to wait for the episode.
I'm really excited for that, because Ubo's just sitting, from what we know as listeners, Ubo's sitting on the floor right now. And he just got done with the deal, so I really want to know what's going on after that.
Yeah, it's what a cliffhanger that ended on 57.
That was so. Let's break this episode down. But there's a whole other episode that we recorded, and that's kind of what I'm speaking to. You get just speaking for Group A right now. All of you guys took the ball and ran with that. So just living, just surviving. That's not getting away clean. Susan, as Maddie just ripped the house down for me. Like, there was a line that she said in this episode that hasn't aired yet that just destroyed me. And there's a lot of character consequences to come from that. Enough screwing around. Episode 57. So Masoka came back. That's awesome. And we, behind the scenes, James kind of took an opportunity, because he thought character stuff with this resurrection, he's been patched up a bit. He's had this very smoker's voice thing. And
that was a nice touch.
That was cool. Was that was a little detail that's like, oh, that's actually really smart. Damn. Okay.
So was that like on the fly, or was he thinking about that for a while?
I imagine. Well, he came into it that session talking about it, so I think it's something he put a lot of thought into. So the situation that Group A faced at the beginning of that episode is: yay, Masoka's back, Anvin's gone. So Michael's sitting in the call. We're just kind of waiting to see what's going to happen. And when we wrapped up the last episode, Rob, How were you feeling, like, as a player? Because, you know, yeah, there were two party deaths, and I think the group ran out of their way to kind of tell you, it's like, yeah, man, it's not your fault. Like, it could have been anything.
Well, no, they did. There was, those of you who are supporting us through Patreon.com, cough.
Nice. That's a good shilling. That's good. Yeah.
Have heard, because you cut both the behind the scenes before and after that episode together, right?
Yes, always do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we were discussing it, and the thrust of the discussion was me basically saying Ubo wants to die, right? Like,
yeah.
He feels like the world's greatest disappointment to everyone he has ever known. He literally is kind of, he no longer trusts himself to take action independently. Like he's at the risk of becoming just like a submissive husk of like, I don't trust myself to make decisions anymore. But then like after that, we didn't play for how many weeks? I'm trying to remember.
Again, the holidays happened.
Yeah.
I think it was so like seven.
So there was a significant break, and I got some time to process and like figure out how I was going to play it. But in the moment, yeah, I was like, at the end of 55, I was just broken. Like both myself, like, oh my gosh, these people wanted to do things with their characters and I've robbed them of it. Oh, shame. But then also thinking about Ubo and him being like, you know, that kind of thing would totally change how he handles himself from that point forward. And then, getting into episode 57 and kind of doubling down, like so desperate to fix what went wrong that he did something more wrong.
Right.
Cause like, yeah, in the moment, like I said, at the end of 55, I was very paralyzed and I'm like, well, Ubo just can't do anything anymore. He can't do anything. And then there was that opportunity hanging, that low hanging fruit of like, you know, and then further to watch Masoka get resurrected and be like, we're halfway there, right? Like to be given that weird, you know, to be broken and shamed and then to get that weird glimmer of hope. Like this is halfway fixed. If I do the other half, it's all fixed.
Right.
You know? Yeah. There's a chance of redemption.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was kind of like looking at the momentum and being like, you know, we're halfway there, you know, like this, I could put this all behind me kind of thing.
Well, let's talk about price. Cause man, so the low hanging fruit Rob's talking about is essentially Clarissa explained to the group. And I think we explained this a lot better in the follow-up episode, but to talk about it here, Clarissa just feels terrible, right? There's very little she can do. She doesn't have the power to try and resurrect somebody. There's nobody at the temple that could attempt that right now. There's just absolute helplessness. And seeing you guys like 24 hours before talking about like it, okay. In hindsight, it's almost the, yeah, man, I'm one day till retirement. I'm going to get my pension and retire by the lake. And I'm boom. And you explode.
Yeah.
And it just, she feels absolutely terrible. So resorting to a demonic pact is basically like, well, here's the only card I got. And she brought it up to the group. That was shot down. What kind of pushed her over the edge was like, Ubo just feels absolutely terrible. She feels absolutely terrible. And she feels like logically the two of them can have a handle on it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like it's funny, you know, the group is like, no, never do that. Don't do that at all. Da, 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 da. And then she goes off on her own and Ubo goes and joins her. And the two like broken, desperate people are in a room with nobody throttling them, you know? Like,
right.
It was like the moment Ubo walked into that room, it was a setup for a crisis.
Yeah. I'm wondering how tough, and anybody in Group A, I think Susan's out there, anybody in Group A who wants to chime in, I'm wondering how tough that is for the rest of the party in a situation like that, when they know that what's about to happen probably isn't good. And they probably want to back you up in some capacity or stop you from doing the thing.
Right.
But character-wise, obviously, they don't know you're about to do it. They're in a completely different place. They're talking. I wonder if that's tough for them just to sit there and it's like, well, I guess we're going to let this awful thing happen.
Oh, I'm sure. I guess my response to that would be, in all the sessions I've played in anyway, DNR has set a precedent of like, hey, maybe don't metagame, right? Like that we don't consciously talk about that in like a high detail way, but it's kind of an unspoken code of like, hey, this is how we roll. If you're not there, you don't know, and don't try to engineer justification to put yourself somewhere where you can't be.
Right. Susan's in the chat. Yep, I completely wanted to do it.
Wanted you to.
Oh yeah. So but obviously Maddie as a character didn't, and that came through later on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we get we're recording this scene, and I wanna step back and talk about recording this, because I had a couple of accusations tossed at me that essentially I engineered it so that it was Darmok.
I remember people accusing you of that D10 table just being Darmok, Darmok, Darmok.
Yeah.
All the way down.
And it's like,
I saw that too, yeah.
I was so happy. The night we recorded it, I always fill in Bree after the fact. Because obviously she's got to stay abreast of everything that's happening on the show. So it's like, oh man, there's this table that just happened to roll an 8 through 10 is this. And so we're talking about it. And I never really thought about it seeming engineered or like ringerish. Like, but yeah, I think at least playfully, I think a lot of people thought that it was just, yeah, there's no other demons on that table, or no, there's, it was going to be that no matter what. And I almost wish it wasn't Darmok.
Just to add some
just to see what else is out there, you know what I mean?
Yeah, communicate the versatility of the setting.
Right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I also think that that's a very interesting twist in that there's... I feel like if that scene had went differently and maybe Uba was a bit more cooperative about it, I think you guys would have gotten it's like, okay, here's the price that I want. Boom, you go do it or whatever. But because Ubo's so reluctant and it was just kind of a mess, we ended up getting a situation where, he kind of grants this wish, but you don't exactly know the cost.
Right. It was like just a favor at a later date, right? Was all of it.
Yes, it's very, it's very monkey paw wish kind of.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, yeah, but at that point, it had become clear to Ubo that his less than stellar charisma was not going to carry him free of this torment.
Right.
So yeah, it was. He kind of turned a corner and was like, "I need to put this into a realm where I'm capable. I need to use my strengths, not my weaknesses, if I'm ever gonna make anything good happen." Yeah, and we all know how that went.
So I guess my question, because this is elephant in the room stuff, we got to talk about this. A Wishmaster. Oh, that, yes, Susan, Wishmaster. Tell me you guys have seen Wishmaster. Those delightfully cheesy. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so good.
I love that movie.
Okay. What do you think the price is going to be? I would love to go around the table here and ask.
Ooh.
Let's start with Zach.
Well, first off, if I can backtrack a little.
Sure.
I feel like the whole 8 through 10 or 8 through 20 Darmok thing isn't really a thing, because we all know how competitive hell is supposed to be, right? And we all know Darmok is on the rise. So it just doesn't make sense to like not have him at a higher level than some of the other demons, right?
Because right.
He's on the rise. I would never thought that would be like something doctored or something just for him only. There's a competition. And that's how I view it. But the price-wise, though, if I remember correctly, Darmok does have her soul, right? That is a thing.
I mean, a deal was cut, yeah. So, like, that technically and belongs to him.
You just don't know what deal, though, right?
Yeah. Because that... those demonic packs, like, the soul isn't necessarily enough. Like, there's so much leverage. If you're desperate enough to do it, there's so much... Like, you're going to sign over a bunch of stuff, right?
And to get my math completely straight here, Clarissa was of the cloth in some capacity.
Oh, yeah.
Oof. Oof, okay. I feel like her soul is going to be used for something quite nefarious, but to say what, I don't know. I know what Darmok wants because he said it clearly. You know, he wants to be freed in a certain sense. So it could be something like that, but what her soul is going to be used for specifically, I couldn't say. I just know Jadzia is involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we're in the back half of Arc 2, so...
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Was it confirmed that's the soul Darmok took was Clarissa's?
No.
Okay. Because here's my theory, y'all. It's Darmok. He's going to take whatever offer's given, and both offers were given to him, so he's got both of their souls.
Darmok is shrewd. It's plausible. And he said he was not leaving there until business was done. So
he's probably just like, all right, I mean, if you both want to give me your soul for this one thing, fine, here, I'll take them both. Get that off your hands.
I don't know. I was under the inclination that there had to be more active agreement than that. Like, you know, Clarissa at the end of that scene basically says something to the effect of just do it or just go. Or like, whereas Ubo was like, go home, monster, like this, you know, we've decided against this meeting. We're going to take our luggage and go kind of thing.
Right. Yeah.
And he's like cutting those hooks out of him. So I don't think Ubo paid, in the sense, I don't think Ubo paid Darmok. I think Ubo, paid in another sense and he feels rather guilty about that. But I guess I'll just like pop into your original question here, which was, what do you think the price is going to be? Here's my out on a limb. And this is my first interaction with Darmok in the PC shoes. So maybe I don't have as much context for him as other people. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, thinking about demons and thinking about being crafty and nefarious, I feel like the ultimate thing of all would not only be to take this pure, kind soul, but would be to use her to actually bring down her church, to put her in a no-win situation where it's either like something you love gets utterly destroyed or tormented or tortured, or you ruin your church. You ruin the faith in a very irreversible way that loses all public trust and
right.
collapses and into ruin. I feel like that's the kind of
I mean, that
way.
Sounds like a really demon-y thing to do. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
So you just, I foresee her getting put in a situation where she has to choose between some great personal loss and the church itself collapsing. And
right.
which one she chooses will just kind of depend on how things play out in the moment.
What's awesome is, like I said, we did record a session after that, but there's been a lot of stuff where I'm getting to write ahead, like I'm kind of seeing where things are going, and I'm trying to guess where we're going to end things at the end of this arc, but it's building up to like, ooh, what if this happens? What if this happens? Like, there's all kinds of terrible, terrible, like, consequences, like, far-flung, but I guess it just depends on how things go the next few sit-downs.
Yeah, like I can see if Darmok is wanting to go one of two routes. Like he can go the one route of how can I get at the gods and then use Clarissa for that, or go for his obsession and then use Clarissa to kind of feed that. I think both of them would break her down immensely, but I guess it depends on what his end goal is.
Right. Do you guys want to backtrack and talk about episode 56 real quick?
Yeah, now that the Slacker's here, I mean, let's go.
Wow.
I'm just joking, just joking.
Well, you were saying you felt really guilty about not being here. Is the reason you were out something very justified, or was it, like, totally frivolous? So I was like, yeah, I just want to go get, like, a big thing of bubble tea before the show or something. Like, was it?
No, I had a call back, and originally everything scheduled out to be fine, but then they pushed me, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's pretty justified.
Yeah, and it was for, like, a paying job, so I really couldn't be like, sorry, guys, y'all missed out, you know?
In all seriousness, get your gigs, man. Go out there. You're fine. Like, you're...
Thanks, I appreciate it. And I had put in enough time where I was like, oh, I'm going to make it back in plenty of time. But then my Uber driver got lost, and it was just a whole hubbub. So, but yeah, we can go back to episode 56 if you want to.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's talk about taking stock. Let's talk about more death and carnage. And
yay, death.
Yay. Okay. Very quick Cliff Notes version for Group B. Holy God. Okay.
We kind of need that a lot.
We do. So, okay, since October, we had Larg die at the hands of assassins who were sent by the Black Hand in Brightport to essentially bring in Braylon and Kaldan. So Braylon and Kaldan, on the way back to Durnhollow to try and find somebody to resurrect Larg, decided that the best thing to do was go on a drug trip.
Yeah.
Okay. This is very difficult to explain because I'm thinking about, like,
we're not Rob. Even halfway there yet.
No. So, Rob, this is what they did. So,
all right. Paint me a picture, Jason.
Okay. So, laying down next to the dead body of Larg in a cart, being driven back to Durnhollow.
Mm-hmm.
Kaldan's idea was to essentially take Therian LSD and try to speak with the gods.
Now, is there precedent for this working, or?
Not really, but like.
Not really?
Not really. It's more like, the way I explained it was, well, I mean, people feel like they talk to a god or something. Like, it's kind of like, that's not, but like, he, I guess it was more, it's Ian, so it's more like, well, I want to try. Like, let's see what happens. Like, it's like, we're just on the road back anyway, so we're going to lay down and take this and just be out on the way back. So, you know, fair enough. Let's do it. So we had these crazy drug trip dream things. And Braylon ends up losing his memory for the last 2 years. Yeah.
All right.
So he wakes up, doesn't know where he is, sees a dead body next to him and the people in the cart, fires off Thunderclap, spooks the donkeys that are pulling the cart, and they start ripping through town. They run over a small child.
Oh, no.
Larg falls out of the back. Yeah, it gets worse. Larg falls out of the back of the wagon. Braylon jumps out to just run off and into the night. And Kaldan gives chase. Meanwhile, everybody else in the cart is just trying to get this cart to stop. Again, they run over a small child. They rip through town on the other side and basically dive off the cart before it kind of hurls off a cliff.
Yep, with all their belongings.
With all their belongings.
Well, most of our belongings.
Most of their belongings.
Most, yeah.
Most
shenanigans.
Donkeys.
Oh, my God.
But wait, we're still not through episode 55.
Nope.
It's insane. So, Callie, which is Karen's character, tries to jump off of the wagon to get to this kid and see if she could save him. She rolls a 1, falls on her face, and hits her head. Manages to get to this, to get to the boy, Jeremy, or Vernon, is the nickname's been given to him over the years, and actually saves the kid. Awesome, right?
Very good.
Yeah. Skipping a bit. Ellen, who is Larg's mentor, lived in Donhurst with him and trained him and all that stuff, known him for years, is a paladin. Mm-hmm. Runs down the road after being informed Larg died. Sacrifices herself to bring him back. So now we have Braylon with no memory of the group or any time for the last 2 years or so. Basically his time on the show. We have a dead Ellen. We have the group heading back into town and then immediately getting into a fight with a crummy bar patron who they tried to rip off before leaving town. It's a huge mess.
Yeah.
It's a big old mess.
To be fair, somewhat self-inflicted.
Yes.
It sounds like.
A little, yes.
I mean, right, like, you kind of like...
It's been a busy few months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Or
for Group B, it's been a busy day.
Yes. So, that's where we... So, okay. By the way, there's a huge bar fight. We're talking like a Blazing Saddles bar fight. And Larg is just so pissed off at this point that he's Terminatoring through the establishment and killing people. And meanwhile, Tatiana's trying to barter with this gentleman named Titus Crane, who is a kind of a low-life pimp guy, like not a good guy.
Sure.
And essentially, he doesn't like the fact that he looked weak in front of the town. So Tatiana's... This guy starts beating Tatiana, essentially, and she's like, okay, our business is concluded here. I'm going to leap off this balcony and make it look like you threw me. So she tumbles off this balcony and injures herself.
Uh-huh.
And that's when the law gets involved, essentially. Just in the nick of too late. that's where we... That's where...
That's where we pick up episode, baby.
Fucking hell. What is this show? So... episode 56, taking stock, essentially. Group B has to have a very frank discussion about what the hell it is they're doing anymore, because...
I feel like there's competing visions going on there for, like...
Yeah, it's a hot mess. So, first off, the group basically takes a look around and says, okay... Are we in a fight? What's happening? Can we just chill? And then they go meet in the bar, and essentially everyone kind of lays out their ideas and thoughts and plans. And obviously, the Black Hand is something to deal with. The whole, you know, Braylon's memory is a thing to deal with. And
Calden's arm.
Calden's. Oh, by the way, forgot to mention this. Calden lost an arm.
That makes it very difficult to adventure.
It does. Yeah, you need an arm. You need two. Yeah. You could get by with one working arm.
At this point, he's been going one arm for a little bit now. He's starting to get used to it, I think.
I mean, now. That will get you. That will get you pretty far. Wait till he's hanging from something, or needs to pull on something, or it's like the second. Now, Calden's a sorcerer, not exactly the most robust physical character class.
He'll never be able to shoot an arrow, though.
That's true. I mean, I guess you could get a modified crossbow or something like that. But yeah. Anyway, they have this big conversation, and essentially, they decide. Okay, we're going to go to Esterholt, and we're going to try and get the Paladins of Cord to go to Brightport with us, and we'll take care of the Black Hand.
I feel like we're missing a really big thing, though.
We are, and I'm going to get to it, I swear. Okay. There's so many big things.
I know.
And we're going to stop at a nearby cave to see if we could find herbs and moss and fungi to mix up a potion and maybe restore Braylon's memories. Now... in the midst of all that, there's this lovely funeral scene. I gotta give Jameson props on this one.
He did so good.
There's this lovely, they had this, funeral scene at dusk, and they kind of bury Ellen in town, well, outside of town, but it's a really touching thing. He has this little letter he wrote, And it's, yeah, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about when people kind of wrote in and they're like, yeah, everyone got off scot-free. It's like, no, they didn't. Like, people die. Okay, we haven't wrapped up this episode, but what did you guys think listening to all this? Because I guess it's kind of rare for backstory characters, because that's a character that Jameson wrote, Ellen. And I guess it's kind of rare for a backstory character to get so much focus on the show.
I mean, like you said, Jason, there's a lot to unpack here, for sure. First, I when I was listening to the episode, well, like, maybe not this episode specifically, because I don't think this is the one where Ian had the idea to take the LSD. But when I was listening to the episode, I was like, oh, this can only go one way, and that's the bad way. And since then, I feel like there's been a cascading effect of, like, Group B trying to, for lack of a better word, just try to, like, catch themselves, and they've been falling even more, like just,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wouldn't say they're bad decisions, or like, man, you know, I don't want to mince words, but like, I just, there are bad repercussions, and they've been to their credit, they've been trying to fix and mend what they've done, but I feel like sometimes this group looks at themselves and they have this moral quandary. Like, are we the good guys here?
Right.
'Cause they were robbing people. Yeah. I won't lie to you. They were robbing people.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, honestly, it's all so entertaining, but it can go so wrong so quickly. Like, how do you know when the law came, cuffs aren't getting slapped on them?
Right. Exactly. I guess it comes down to, like, proof. Because they did get away, not scot-free, but they got away with, like, one witness.
Now, Jason, if that boy died in that street.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say, if that boy died.
That was the thing I got an email about. I got an email, it's like, that kid should have stayed dead. You gave him too many chances. And I'm like, I mean,
here's the thing, is I agree with everything that you are saying. That, yes, it does feel like we're falling and that we're trying to catch up. And that is due to the fact that I feel we have really bad dice nights, and then we'll have, like, good ones, you know? But it's like, when we have a bad dice night, it is a bad one. It's like every single roll that actually has stakes is bad. So it makes for an interesting story. Like you said, like, it's entertaining, which is great, because I feel like everybody in Group B works really well with sort of going with the punches.
Right.
You know? I've noticed that, especially Jameson losing such a great character like Ellen. I'm sad that she didn't get more time on the show, because it seemed like that backstory and relationship was really sought out by Jameson, and he's such a great role player. I wish I could have gotten more of that, but, you know, you can only do what the dice will allow.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like, relatively speaking, and this may be just, I guess this could be my mind coloring things in, but I feel like Group A, things have been relatively good for them since the arc started until very recently. Mm-hmm. I feel like everything that they've attempted to do, they've pointed at the situation and said, we're going to do this, and it mostly works out.
For Ubo's money, like, for the longest time with Group A, his biggest problem was, we really take our time walking from town to town, right?
Yeah.
What if we got moving, you know?
Let's jog sometimes.
Yeah, that was his biggest concern at a certain point.
And I feel like Group C, for the most part, it's been touch or go. Like, they started off rough with Elrath catching a deadly disease and them trekking through the desert, and that was all crappy, but it hasn't all been crappy, you know? Group B, it's been one big story version of Kick the Can, and Group B is the can. And it's just been, since, like, you had one pleasant day when the arc started. You guys were in
the fair bay.
The fair bay. You guys had a nice fair. It was the harvest festival, and you guys are having fun. You went and saw Tatiana's family, and ever since then, you've been attacked by locusts. You've lost arms Assassin. And memories. A demon-filled city. The divide. Oh my God, the divide. And it's just been one catastrophe after another. I guess my question, now that you guys have centered yourselves and you're pointing at the road and you have a plan, do you think it's going to even out?
I mean, much like Group A, we have an episode in the can, yes?
Yep.
So I know the answer to that question. but I think the real question is, like, have we really evened ourselves out? Because all of these issues that we were still facing are still here. We just now have a game plan.
True.
As to how to sort of attack them, you know? I think we definitely needed episode 56, where we sort of just sat down and really talked about, like, okay, here's everything that we put on our own plates. Let's decide what we're going to handle first. And I think it's our turn to have some good news for Group B. 2019, baby.
That was the joke, wasn't it? It's like, oh, 2019, we're turning it around, we're doing it.
The good news from what I'm hearing, the good news is, it sounds like you've set yourself up for kind of a great, meaningful late story arc, no matter what, because you sat down and you all said, this is it, we're gonna fix it, we're gonna do better, and we're gonna be better. Mm-hmm. So you've got two possible stories that play out, right? You've got the triumphant, like, we actually do it. We resolve ourselves. We change as people, so on and so forth. Or you've got the, like, hilariously tragic of, like, no, the downfall goes even further, right?
Oh,
like,
my God.
We commit to turning around, and then everything bursts into flames.
Right? It could happen. I mean, and it would be entertaining. Either way, I think Group B will be able to push through it, because...
And yeah. It's so funny. The beautiful thing about last season and playing with some people and switching it up is, you know, I played with Karen, I played with Valerie, and I can tell by sometimes their tone and inflection, they're about done with the shenanigans. I can tell.
Especially Valerie. Ooh. You can totally tell with Valerie. I love yes. you so much. I love you, Valerie.
You need, like, a project manager to be like, no, we're not going on the rabbit trail. Stay on track. So I'm going to check in with you tomorrow and make sure that we could check this off.
When Ian suggested the drugs, I could tell Karen was like, huh? What?
Karen's momly instincts took over, so Callie became like, I guess I'll keep an eye on you and hydrate you while you're unconscious. Valerie's just done. And what's awesome about this is, in D&D sometimes someone will come up with a crazy idea, right? And then the dice kind of work with that person and prove them right. Not in Group B. A wacky idea is thought up and it goes the worst possible way. And Valerie as Elaine is just like, okay, hold up, stop. So your idea is to completely incapacitate yourself. And what was the other idea that Calden had? It's like, well, we need to go to the Silver Glade and go. It's like,
you got to get the inflection, though, because she's like, so you're telling me.
Yeah. Just the most rational character.
Every single time she does it, I have to mute because I am cracking a nut, because it is just so perfect for Elena. I love it so much.
Because, I mean, in reality, I think most people would be that person, but the group, mm-hmm. The group is so, I think they're so used to thinking outside the box that Elena is like trapped in a sitcom where it's like, is no one else thinking this is insane? Like, we're all going to die. And,
hats off to Valerie, because I love how she's playing Elena, because she's just trying to live her life. She went into a bar, found someone nice. It's so great. It's nice to see someone that's just trying to be a human, you know, just trying to.
What was his name that she met?
Oh, damn it. The half-elf gentleman.
Yes, the half-elf.
I hope we see him again.
I don't think that's over. I don't know. Valerie was quick to write it off. It's like, well, I guess we didn't hit it off. It's like, I don't know. Like, a lot was going on at the time. That could have.
Especially if you, like, run into each other in another city, then it's a whole new thing.
Oh, it's romantic.
We could be hiding under the cart, but that could be a thing.
Been there, done that.
Yeah, I didn't even mention the guy that strapped himself to the bottom of their cart to stalk one of them.
Wow. I didn't even mention.
Yeah. To wrap up this, if all that wasn't enough.
Oh, this is the best part.
If all that wasn't enough for Group B, while you guys are having a very heartfelt discussion about what you should do and where you should go, a couple of things are laid out on the line. Larg confesses to the group that he's sure he spoke to Arathis while he was dead. And that Arathis said, oh, there's a bunch of awful things coming, and you guys might be the some of the only people who could stop it. So that's no pressure, right? And then Callie revealed to the group, to talk about it, that there's a curse on her family, and that every time someone reaches the age of 30, they die.
Two small things.
Couple of small things. So Callie has months to live, and Larg kind of laid it on the group. It's like, yeah, we got to save stuff. And that has not been working for the group so far. So whether that's true or not, I mean, that's... So the group decided to head to Esterholt and try to get the Paladin's Accord to help out, which, honestly, I don't know how that's going to go. So that was episode 56. Holy shit.
But we went through a few days in that episode because we started on the 27th of Yesti and ended on the 2nd of February. So we're catching up.
Yep. Things are happening. Let's jump ahead to episode 58 of Arc 2 Acquaintances. This is a Group C episode. So we're gonna tag in Ryan and Zach a lot more here. Interesting way to kick off this episode. You guys are outside of Aldmore, and you realize someone's following you. And your instinct, I guess, is to just leave them alone. They're fine.
Well, first was stare back at them.
Yes.
That was the initial thing of like, don't look, and then everybody looks.
Avalyn went to the middle of the road so we can get a good look. I promise you, I was going to have him walk down the road, but you said he was like half a mile away, so I didn't want
to be a long walk.
Yeah, I didn't want to go that long, but if he was closer, that would have been an easy decision.
Mm-hmm. Who do you think it was?
I couldn't tell you. I don't know.
Yeah,
it would follow us. I mean, I don't think we're being followed. I just feel like it was someone on the trail, maybe.
Mm. Oh, Rob, I guess you should know this. There was an attempt on Tessia's life.
Oh!
She's not exactly making friends with the Black Hand. And they're heading south to Onakal, the desert city, to talk about business things with the Eladrin.
Okay.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah. I want you, just quick side note. As I sit here and you're repeatedly filling me in on things because you know that I have not been listening to the other two groups. I want to state my intent on the recording here to listen to Arc 2 and actually be an informed cast member outside of my group.
What?
I'm gonna try to be better.
That's, well,
2019, okay. Baby, 2019.
It occurs to me how terribly that reflects on me as part of the cast to be unsupportive in that fashion and just not, I feel like it's been a handicap to being better integrated with people outside my own group, and that needs to stop.
Well, I mean, you're a dad, you got work, you got stuff. Like, I mean, I don't know that everybody in the, I think most people try to listen to everybody else. The cool thing is your job's a third of those episodes you don't have to listen to because you were there.
Well, right, right, and so I'll listen around those, but I want to be better about this. So I just want for all the people sitting here listening to Jason like giving me session recaps so I can participate in the conversation. I'm gonna try to tune that down. I'm gonna try to get things back in order and catch up and listen to what I
Well, that's awesome, man. I noticed you were much more engaged for the behind the scenes thing. Like you jumped right in. There was no part of us that was sitting there like, oh, Rob's not talking. It was just like, yeah, you're hanging out. You're doing your thing.
Well, yeah, not to sidetrack this much longer, but I think also just like popping in more on the Facebook page and seeing the conversations surrounding all the stuff that just happened to Group A, I'm like, man, there are a lot of really passionate people absorbing this show, I would do more justice to them to be a stronger cast member on the information front. So, it's actually been like really encouraging to like get me to this point to go to the Facebook page and see how much enthusiasm all of you listeners have as you're talking about the show. That's been kind of a cool corner to turn.
Yeah, dude, they're all insane. They're amazingly awesome people. And I know I've brought up the emails a couple times. I am in no way like hurt or mad that we're getting emails like that. I'm glad you feel you. Okay. Do you know for me how much I got to feel something to email somebody about something I heard on a show? I don't know that I've ever done that. Like, that's insane that people, we get those emails every single day and it's fucking awesome. Like,
it's like when you get the receipts back for making a purchase and they're like, oh, hey, would you mind doing this survey? And you have every intention to do that survey. Yep. But then you get home and you're like,
yeah, it's so hard, Chipotle.
So
like,
go
it's just,
everybody who writes in.
Yay.
Okay. I sidetracked things enough, but yeah.
Yeah.
Go enthusiasm. Okay. Go ahead.
So Group C of the three groups we're talking about had the best time, I think. There were no deaths. It was awesome. So you guys get to Aldmore, and there's a big Warforged community, right? I mean, not big, but big in terms of, I guess, percentages. There's not many Warforged left. So the fact that they're all kind of living in Aldmore and hanging out and kind of talking about Warforged rights and, you know, all that stuff. It's kind of interesting to see. We're talking about artwork for the book, and I would love to get artwork done of Drac, because I believe on Twitter most people associate him with like Bender.
I saw that.
I love that, and we'll do that from now on.
I keep saying it's like, yeah, but Bender's more likable. Like, Drac's an asshole. Like, he's not.
Yeah, Bender has like weird charisma about him, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Drac doesn't care who likes him at all.
No. So you guys get to Aldmore, you're looking around, there's kind of a carnival feel to the place. There's a lot of street performers, there's stuff going on. And you guys decide to go to, speaking of Drac, you go to a bar/inn called The Lantern. And Jasper, like, Merrick had interacted with Drac a couple of years back on the show, but the rest of the crew is just meeting him for the first time. That is one of the rare, not rare, but it's one of those scenes where we just got to screw around and you guys just got to hang out in a bar and we rolled for drinks and we did all kinds of stuff. Like, is that something you guys enjoy? Is that high up on a list of things that you're like, maybe looking forward to, or is it more, heavy role play stuff?
For me personally, I feel like that's a part of the heavy role play stuff, you know, like that's important for me because like there was some, I wouldn't say character development, maybe it is, but like there's something revealed about Avalan. He's not too keen about Warforged in general. I wouldn't say he is racist towards them openly. He just doesn't like them. He was on the side of they should have been eradicated completely. That's just how it is. He's from
Zach. I think that's racism.
Preach,
well,
preach.
I mean, it sounds.
When you say, okay, I'm just saying, in the real world, if you start up, it's like, look, I'm not racist. I just think they should have been eradicated. I think that's racism.
Right? Listen, I got nothing against them. They should have just been wiped clean off the map.
Oh, my God.
Hashtag Malchus was justified. No.
He was very justified.
Yes.
Did something happen to give him that? Unless you don't want to give spoilers.
Oh, no, no. It's from the past. It was from Arc 1. It was more about that. And Avalan, he met Malchus, right? And his opinion of Malchus is very, very high, which he doesn't really talk about, but it is. And he used to be a ranger who specifically lived in the woods, and he was around the time Overwatch was in its full reign, so he saw the devastation they caused, and like, he doesn't fully understand that they were slaves,
right?
They were people that were taken from their body and put into this metal construct. He doesn't really understand that. He just understands, as an entity, they're an abomination, and the less of them, the better. That's just what he's
been
stuck with.
They're not natural. They shouldn't be. They shouldn't be put in that position. We shouldn't have to deal with them.
Interesting.
They're the antithesis of something that isn't natural. Like they just everything that's just unnatural and shouldn't be created is what they are. He just does not like them. Being around them makes him very uncomfortable because they have no social cues like ticks or anything that he really looks for in like a social aspect. So he just
right. They don't even blink. They just
no.
Yeah, I get that.
They don't breathe. They don't do anything. So he doesn't – it might sound terrible. He just does not see them as people at all. So,
when you explain it like that, that makes way more sense. Maybe don't lead off with the eradicate them all line, but like the rest of it, it's like, oh, no, I completely see what you're getting. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The devastation.
Well, if you have to do that 5-second pitch, man, you only got so much time.
Kill them all.
Gotta make your statement clear.
Yeah, hook you in.
With the producer, you can't necessarily get into why you want to kill them all, right? You just have to got to show your passion.
You got to wait for him to say, "Go on."
I'm listening.
Yeah, for me on that side though, it's you have to have the smaller roleplay moments in order to build up to the large heavy roleplay moments.
Yes.
If all you have is heavy roleplay moments and combat, then you're not going to see a lot of big shifts and a lot of character growth, because the character growth is what happens with the small stuff, and that's how you start learning, oh, well, this person doesn't like that, or that person's really starting to talk to this other person. And that's how the party really comes together. Because in reality, if we were in their shoes physically, yes, Varys would have done a lot more talking and everything else, because they would have spent days on the road, and there's a lot of stuff that we don't see. So we're trying to hit the highlights of their adventure, but you have to highlight some of these things for the characters to grow. So we can't just always do the heavy stuff.
No, I totally agree. Even going so far back as like arc one, early arc one, there were scenes where they would retire to a bar, or they're just talking to a random person on the street, and those are some of my favorite moments, just because you get to see them. Absolutely. As people. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to chime in. I think what you guys are saying about how you need the light moments and the heavy moments, it makes me think maybe some of you love anime, maybe some of you think it's just like trash, but like thinking about anime and thinking about like anime series and things like that, it's very common. Like, watch for the pattern. You'll get like, if it's like a 20 something episode series or something, you'll get like 6 or 7 episodes of just like whimsical hijinks misadventure at the beginning while you're just getting to know the people, and you start to love them through that, and then they start driving the knife into them, and it's that much more meaningful that they're experiencing tragedy, because you've seen them be lighthearted and friendly and happy, and the contrast between where the story started and where it went.
Right. So you guys essentially get served some disgusting beverages.
Oh. And see, it was at that point Avlin was feeling like this is personal, right? And Bree said something in the chat, which is kind of true. I was pretty openly racist at times because I was just peering at the guy, but like, I was ready to take it further. I was ready to go above and beyond if the situation called for it. But we left pretty much after that. But
ooh,
I was ready to. I was
what
ready to
degree?
Get into it. Oof, I was. If this guy hasn't felt fear before, that might have been his day.
I am very interested in this.
Wow. Okay.
We're still in that town. That's all.
You
I'm
are.
Say.
Oh snap.
I will certainly push that button. Let's do it. Yeah.
Jason's
yeah.
taking notes right now.
All right. Taking yeah. note now.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I just feel like, you know, not everyone can be, like, super well-rounded. And there's some people that just have a certain button or a certain thing they just can't like. And that's it for Avalyn.
Very simple. I want to explore that. Not because it's... not because like that would lead to something terrible, just because it's like I think it's interesting to establish that side of Avalan, because for the most part I think he's been there's a creepy charming thing about Avalan, right? Like I don't think we've ever gotten a comment that's like I don't like Avalan. I think we get a lot of like, man, he is clearly on the spectrum or something. Like he very much gets by on reading social cues. Now that Effany's gone.
Oh, I was just going to talk about that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Now, see, the thing is, when he was getting out of line, he had a natural tether right there, someone to calm him down, someone to say, that's not right, you shouldn't do that. But she's gone. And to Avalyn, like, she left, but she just kind of up and left him. He wanted to go with her in a certain aspect, but mm-hmm. she was like, no, I had to do this on my own. So to him, he's like, oh, you don't need me anymore. Maybe I'm too far this way, or I'm too far that way, and you just don't feel like I'm necessary anymore. So something might change in Avalyn, even though he's with a party, he's with people that respect him and care about him. He might just not know where his boundaries are anymore.
And that's one of the saddest things when... You can not to make this super dark, but like you could be surrounded by people that love you and care about you and support you, but you don't feel it. So you still feel adrift. That's a terrible feeling. So I'm interested to see where this goes.
And, you know, just being surrounded by like the festival and like people singing, and it's like people you're at a concert, but your favorite singer is not there. So what does it mean to you?
Right.
Yeah.
Moving on. So, okay. Interesting thing here. So, the entire reason the group went to Aldmore is to find a Diana Astaroth. And Kelsey was kind enough to reprise that role and hop onto Group C. And,
did she cast any, like, over-complex summons that took, like, an entire hour to adjudicate?
Thankfully, no. I love Kelsey, but holy shit.
Oh, like, man. Kelsey's fine, but Kelsey's, I'm so glad we retired Diana. Like, Diana was problematic for getting sessions completed in a timely fashion.
Yeah, it was. I don't necessarily blame Diana so much as I blame 4E.
Yeah, yeah. Totally, yeah. It's the system, definitely.
But
I'm sure Diana couldn't do that, the same thing again in this system, you know?
Don't dare Kelsey.
I wouldn't underestimate Kelsey. I wouldn't.
I'm very interested to see if that can happen. So yes.
I
double dog dare her.
Shut up, Ryan.
I don't think there's a strong summon build in 5e. I think we're safe for now.
Yeah, until there's an unearthed arcana that fucks everything up. But like as of now, I think we're okay. But yeah, that was really cool of Kelsey, and I like to call Mandy the worst kept secret on DNR.
Yeah.
Mandy debuted as Iris. Iris and Diana were essentially kind of study buddies hanging out, researching the occult, in the Aldmore Library. Diane is caught up on everything that's happening with Tessia and agrees that she should go find Tessia and see if she needs any help. Diane has been working with House Dragonkeep for a bit now, and that's what's been going on. Diane is a little more grounded as a character, a little less, I guess, a little less jaded or angry, which was nice to kind of get a chance to show that off. And we might get a chance to do some more with that. Iris is a very interesting, peppy character, and that stands to reason, because Mandy's a very peppy person. And I'm looking forward to seeing how that meshes with the group.
I think they're going to be a fun addition to the team for sure.
Yeah,
I think so.
So usually when someone joins the cast, we're very coy about whether or not they're on the show. Ryan, I think you sat in on like 4 sessions before you finally got a chance to speak. And we usually cut people out of the behind the scenes, and we're very coy about it. Manny's been hanging out for a while now, and she's on one of the Patreon groups. So I don't think they knew, but at the same time, it's like, I suspect that like Mandy's on the show. And then Mandy was on like a one shot thing on Patreon before she even debuted on the show. It was a mess, but yeah, that was the holidays.
It's 2019, like, baby. Okay.
One of the, I think even one of the behind the scenes stuff, like, Bree beeped my name out of a few things.
Could have.
Somebody would talk to me or something. It was like, beep, and then cut. So my answer wasn't even there.
But like, they're speaking to the void?
Exactly. It was like, they're speaking to somebody, but I don't know what's happening. Like that's how much of a secret it was.
Fucking Dr. Claw is like...
like a character on Super Smash out. Brothers we had to fight. To unlock.
And it was, yeah, it was just the opposite. It was interesting to see.
So, yeah, I think we just... It was too hard to hide anymore, so we're just like, yeah, whatever. You guys are paying for it. You can... Yeah, it's Mandy.
Even then, though, I feel like we had a fun little first meeting, though. I think it was nice.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Read me a story.
good God. That... wraps up episode 58, and I wanna get to chat questions and stuff like that. I usually post online for you guys to send us questions and all that. We've just been swamped. So if you guys have questions in the chat, please fire them off at us. And does anyone on the panel have anything to say about an episode that we haven't had a chance to cover, or something that happened behind the scenes, or I don't know, something we're prepping for?
I've got something on the side here. I ran a very brief 3-hour Twitter poll this afternoon, which, by the way, you were not kind enough to retweet when you shut me down.
I did not shut you down. Oh. I was trying to be your compadre. I was like, hey man, it ain't just you. Trust me. I was more like that. Not like, it ain't just you, Rob. Like I was trying to be supportive.
Okay, it doesn't spend that many calories to click retweet, is all I'm saying. All
Jesus right? Christ, let me go retweet.
Anyway, I was asking people, it's too late now, don't worry about it.
I'm being a bad internet friend.
Subscribe, Rob.
But I was asking people, who do they think has done more unforgivable stuff, Malchus or Ubo? And Malchus edged out Ubo in the poll. There was also an option of just like hard to say if you didn't think you could decide. But Malchus, people voted slightly more for Malchus, which I found interesting. And I just wanted to, while we're waiting for questions to pour in, say there is stuff going on in Ubo's head about why he's done what he's done the last few episodes that I think if the right person coaxes out of him into the public, you will have a different opinion of Ubo than you hold now. I don't want to load it by like saying what kind of opinion I think you'll have, but I think there's things you don't know about Ubo that will surprise you if someone gets him to talk about why he did what he did there.
Okay. I don't even think it's fair to compare Malchus with Ubo. Like,
yeah, me neither.
I mean, Malchus did what he did in the context of war, and Ubo Ubo did something on an extremely personal level, right?
Right.
Like in one sense, it's very isolated to just strictly the people involved, but also like pretty directly abhorrent.
Right.
Whereas war is like kind of anonymous in a lot of ways when done at the distance Malchus did what he did. So I don't know. Yeah, it's, and they are very different, but I asked kind of the, I asked that question the way I did, just because I want to see what people's hot button is between the two, even with them being kind of apples to oranges comparisons.
Hmm.
Yeah. That should be enough time for questions to filter in. I'm going to throw it back over to Jason.
Thanks, Rob. I'm going to go retweet everything you've tweeted in the last week and a half, just to cover my bases. It's like that Sims friendship when it's like, oh, I haven't called Rob in a while. Got to get that meter back up. Jeez.
Yeah, those interactions.
Yep. In the hot tub.
We plus did get 20.
All right.
We did get an email from Michael J. Michael writes, hey, everybody. Episode 56, Group B, I'm really stoked for you guys. Nothing horrible happened. Clearly, Stormy needs to be on every episode. He's your good luck charm. Just that was, I think I edited out most of Stormy.
I'm not the worst person. That's just, I think we all today came to this stream expecting to leave with some knowledge, and
okay, there's okay.
That is it. I'm the worst person.
Stop it. Your cat meowed like four times. Do you know how many recordings Suki's ruined? So much so that after 7 hours of just screwing with the site, I added Suki to the cast page.
Saw that. I made a comment about that earlier. It was like, in our mascot.
Yep.
That's amazing. And it makes me so happy. It's because I have my cat on a schedule, on a feeding schedule. So if when 6 o'clock, when we begin our recordings,
right, yeah.
is when he is fed. And so if I'm on the computer, he'll be like, bitch, what do you think you're doing?
We need to have like a cast pets page and just post pictures of all of our pets there.
Yeah,
or a cast kids page.
Oh, that too. You can make them both.
Just put them both together. Cast.
Oh,
things.
That too.
Let's see. Michael goes on episode 57, Group A. have you guys thought about how expensive that booby trap was? I don't know how expensive that stuff is in the new arc, but in arc one, it was crazy expensive, and some asshole filled a cart and left that shit there. Just so that it could kill someone at some point in the someday, sometime. Whoever's throwing that kind of money around is going to be a problem. That is a good point. I don't think anybody was thinking about the expense of the cart or the explosives at the time.
Yeah.
See, I just don't feel like it's something someone, a cart just someone left there. I just feel like maybe it was, I feel like it had a destination, but something happened. That's my guess.
Yeah.
I think you're right. Yeah. Like, I think it seems like there is a bit of story that we did not end up getting to explain why that was there that
not
we may
yet,
figure
no.
out someday. Yeah, like it wasn't the, so it wasn't like random, it wasn't an asshole random encounter that was just there to be like herp derp explosive cart.
Yeah, I don't like to do that all that much.
Yeah,
like
yeah. It was purposeful. We just don't know what the purpose was, so
right.
That'll be a mystery, like those weird gates.
Oh, it's been seven years. 7 years. Someone, you know what, I'm glad we're publishing a book, because at least the gates will be published somewhere. Like, someone will get to it. Nope. If it ain't in our campaign, nope. It's someone's.
Take it out, put it in the trash. It's never going to be used.
No. Like, some guy named Doug or Diane or someone is going to run a game in Ohio, and they're going to figure out the gates. They'll get to the gates. Yeah. It'll be great. and finally, episode 58, Group C. It was awesome to hear Kelsey appearing on a Group C episode, but that was not the Diana that I remember from Arc 1. What happened to her creating such a complete personality shift? I don't remember Diana being interested in books, at least not unless they could bring her more power. And she had a complete conversation with a human without making one racist remark. What was that? And they mentioned that Diana still has her staff. Is that still the staff of Unwavering Light that she can't even use because she isn't a cleric? Why in the world does she still have that thing? You guys are all awesome, and I'm loving every minute of ARC 2. Be excellent to each other, Michael J. Yeah, man, that's still the same stuff. I like that part of Diana didn't go away. That for whatever reason, Diana's like, it's my staff. I picked it up.
Maybe can she's actually really nostalgic about her old group.
I doubt it.
She has changed. Yeah. She has changed.
I doubt it.
I can't speak for Kelsey. Kelsey's not here, but like, who would Diana be nostalgic for? Like, I can't think of a single person.
Theo? The answer is Theo?
Maybe? Yeah, it wasn't Theo, that's for sure.
As far as, I can't speak for Kelsey either in this respect, but as far as, like, characters changing when you haven't played them for a while, maybe it's just me, but, like, sometimes you forget the finer points of how you played them, right? Like, it kind of gets more generalized as you've had months or years or more away from it. And so you can draw a few, I'm sure I played Malchus differently in some of the little things I played him in later, just because, you know, you kind of get a more, just kind of a, what do I want to say? Like a blurry generalized image instead of like specific, all the specific notes you remember from playing every month.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can't speak for Kelsey, but I know for sure, cause we talked a while ago, when Diana walked off of group one, Kelsey had a bigger story they wanted to tell with Diana and all that. And it's been years. So, there is a mellowing out. There is a, interacting with Tessie on a daily basis and kind of finding something to be attached to and fight for. But that's kind of a cool thing. If you put a character down and pick them up a year or two or something later, you're like Rob said, you're going to play them a little differently no matter what. So I don't know. I think that helps kind of simulate change or just, none of us are the same people we were 2, 3, 4 years ago. Right.
Oh, absolutely. And, it also like with that change, if there's enough time that passes in the game world too, you can just kind of backfill to explain it. Right. Like you can say, oh yeah, yes, I guess I am playing this character differently. Some stuff happened. They mellowed out, you know, like, right. You fill it in and then it becomes more lore.
Yeah. I mean, God, we did that with Valis and Malchus, where it didn't have to be such a cantankerous relationship where they, you know, or at least on Valis' side, where he just absolutely loathes Malchus. So it's more like a brotherly thing where it's like, ugh, I hate when he talks about politics, but he's my brother. I love him. Like, whatever. Like, it's, you know what I mean?
And I don't know. Malchus perceives it as, yes, killing him with kindness finally worked, right? Like,
right. Yeah,
like Malchus actually showed up in person and was like, hey, you've got a kid now. That's great. Like, how do you stay mad at someone who's like proud of, you know, like proud right. of you for starting a family? That kind of thing.
Right. And again, when all you have is the anger to hold on to, it's like, now he's got like a wife and kids. And he's like, I don't have time to be that angry.
Exactly.
Man. Okay. One last chance for the chat to throw in any questions they might have, but do you guys have anything you want to talk about just before we get ready and sign off for the month? And
there was an interesting question in chat someone asked. Briar Kelly XX Gambit asked, yes, would Avalyn have left the rest of the party if Ethne had allowed him? And the answer is yes, he would have left. We've talked about it. We had a conversation about what was going to happen with Ethne before the episode she left. And we came to the conclusion that, you know, I didn't want to take the whole spotlight away from Jane leaving the show, because that's something that was important to have kind of her like ride out into the sunset.
Right. But
it is something that we came onto the show together, so I was completely signed up for leaving together. That to me, that would just would have wrapped up a certain chapter in Avalon's life, but we kind of just decided to like let them keep trucking on, because that's a different and interesting storyline in and of itself.
That one hurt too, because it's not okay, not to mince words, people have left the show under not so great circumstances. I mean, we've all known each other for years, and sometimes things just kind of like don't work out. But that was not the case with Jane, obviously. This was purely a time zone thing. Poor Jane was up till, what, 5, 6 a.m.?
Every session.
It was... There were nights where she was clearly caffeinated and ready to go, but then there were nights where it's like, I just got off work. I'm dying. And it we tried to keep it going for months and months, and she hung on, but... Yeah, it was not a great recording schedule for Jane. So.
And there were sessions where, like, you would just, after a while, you just wouldn't hear from Jane because she was just so tired.
Yeah,
she was just
she's
so
dying.
Tired.
Scroll back up in the chat a little bit. IC Productions asked, do you think it would have gone just as bad if Masoka had opened the door before Uba had a chance to do what he did? And Jason, I think the answer to that is there was a chance to, like, use thieves' tools / disable that booby trap.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it would have totally, I see it would have totally just depended on how the dice rolled. I suspect there was a way to get that armor and maybe other treasures out of there cleanly, but yeah. Man, impulse control's a hell of a thing, huh?
I almost never are you guys in a situation where there's no right answer, right? Like sometimes it's the least terrible option, but like that, like you could have just walked on, you could have picked the lock and got in there. And like, I think once you pick the lock and open the door and you see, oh, I think you kind of like, it's like, ooh, this is a delicate operation now. And you've never been faced with anything like that. I like tossing stuff at the party where it's like, oh, that's new. I guess I'll keep an eye out for that from now on. There's totally an option where that could have ended. That could have been a minor encounter. You guys walk on and no one would have been the wiser. You could have just skipped entirely.
Hindsight's the best superpower, right? Everybody, who would have thought that cart was nothing more than a cart? It's just like, you can't see those things coming, and everyone gets wracked with like impulses and like, you know what, I just want to do this thing real quick. There's things you just can't see coming, and I think that was one of the greatest moments, arguably, of the season so far. Ooh. I listened to that episode.
Yeah.
As a person on the cast, I listened to that episode like twice already, and I get the same, this smile creeps across my face when it happens every time. It's so good.
It's starting to sound a little grim, actually. Like, I loved it when you burned. No.
He wants them eradicated, so it's okay.
It certainly was like the kind of, like, almost a Game of Thronesian, like, no one is safe. Like, random, you know, random butchery can go down. Yeah. And of course, as it was discussed, you know, yes, we did resurrect both the people who were killed, but also... one was at risk and one was actually at a major price paid that's going to really change the direction of Group A's story.
Yep.
Even though the impacts that we looked at as far as the deaths were reverted, quote unquote, it still has changed the direction of Group A forever.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, with that being said, guys, I'm going to get ready and call it for the evening. Thank you to everybody on the panel tonight. Thank you guys for making time. And
thank you
to everybody in the chat. As a quick old reminder, because I'm actually trying to post clips of the things we do on YouTube now. It's kind of slow and steady, but I'm working on it. We actually just recorded a really cool thing for Patreon, Living in Theria, that was all about slavery. You guys asked, a lot of questions. Basically the economics of it, who's doing it, where is it legal, where is it not legal, all that. We answered like 60 questions about it. Thank you guys for all of those. And you can find that on patreon.com/DANDR. We also just posted the first, the redo of the Athias Explorers game, the Monster Hunters. It's called Bump in the Night. And that campaign is started. And we're recording Vampire the Masquerade this Monday. We're finally kicking that off.
I can't wait for that.
Holy shit, dude. We very rarely get a chance to play things that aren't D&D. I've been really looking forward to that one. That's a modern setting, and we've never done that before, so...
Is that a one-shot or a mini-series, or how's that structured?
It's going to be a campaign. We're just going to keep going with it.
Fun.
My mind has snapped to the discussions we had in the past during the growth of DNR with me getting progressively more exasperated with how much D&D and role-playing games you run.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, Jason, 4 is too many, and now you're sitting here like, 7, 8.
Well, okay. If it makes you feel any better, only 5 of them are recorded and public. 2 of them each month are just for listeners.
I think we just heard Bree laugh in the other room.
Yes, you did. You did. Because we have weeks like this one where I did 4 back-to-back D&D nights, and then I'm just like, I'm dying. And sometimes the months just fall like that because we're balancing that and we're writing a book. And I'm fucking stupid. I think if anything has been taught to everybody over the last 7 years, Rob, I'm not smart.
Well, but man, do you have endurance to compensate, right?
Like, yeah.
I remember in college running like a session of D&D in the afternoon and then D20 Modern in the evening back to back, and it was 8 hours of DMing one day. And by the end of it, I felt like my brain had thickened, right? Like, I felt like I had like a lump of pizza dough in my skull where my brain used to be. So to do as much DMing as you do, it sounds banana bonkers to me.
I think we all have gifts and talents, and that's my one. So
also, it's your career, right? Like,
right,
that's
exactly.
That's the other out you have. It's like you're not doing 40 hours a week at another job. You're doing 40 hours a week at this job. So, likely more, right?
I have no idea how many hours. We don't count because it's just. But again, in April, it's all going to pay off. Guys. Okay, as soon as we're done here, I'm going to drop the gorgeous completed map on the basement. Oh my god, you no believe this map. Oh, it's so good.
So pretty.
Go in there now. Be refreshing.
It's so gorgeous. I can't wait to get a copy of it and put it on my wall.
Oh my god. So thank you guys so damn much for listening, for ratings on iTunes, for following us everywhere you follow us, and for supporting us on Patreon. We will see you next week with a brand new episode of the show. I believe it's a Group A. Get ready.
Oh, man. Prepare yourselves.
Yeah.
Stretch before you listen to it. It's a
humdinger. Oh, boy. I'm excited.
Oh, my God. Thank you, guys. And we'll see you next month with another extended rest. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, y'all.